Charles, we have to be extremely factually accurate from this point further, because the taste of my foot is quite not good.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of Breaking the Panel, your one-stop shop for everything comic book to movie to, well, just general geekery related. Let me go ahead and introduce our team, who all have their specific icon folders that we hacked off an eccentric millionaire's hard drive. First up, under the icon of a soapbox, it's Mr. Paul Klotz. Hi, Paul.
Yeah.
under the icon of a magnifying glass, it's Mr. Chris Wisdom.
I'm the dark brooding one that doesn't inspire much hope in anyone.
Cry baby.
That's what my dad taught me.
Oh, wow.
At least you have a dad still.
Wow. What's your dad's name? Let me scroll down a little bit. Oh, it's another icon right down here. It's a picture of a house and a bear. It's Mr. Charles McFall.
You know, I want to pull out a Deadpool banging a unicorn reference, but those guys just, they are the funny. They brought the funny.
They are the funny. All right. So we got a lot of great stuff.
Hey, what's your icon?
I don't know. I didn't write that.
Shining bald head.
Glabrous dome.
A great record with a lightning bolt through it.
Yeah. There we go. Wow. All right. Let's go ahead. A lot of stuff to talk about on today's show. The hottest off the presses, though, is the brand new trailer for, or the teaser, I should say, for Rogue One, which dropped this morning as the day that we're recording this. And I assume we've all had a chance to watch it a few times, or at least once, to kind of get an idea of what's going on here. Let's talk about it. Let's see what our thoughts are on this. Obviously, we're, you know, looking at this with a bold different direction for the Star Wars films. Yeah. We haven't had a film yet out of seven movies that hasn't centered around the Skywalker Solo family situation, basically, right? The Empire and the several generations the two generations really of Skywalkers that inhabit it. This one takes a different turn. And while the Empire is present, we're not focused on Han, Leia, Luke, Yoda, and all those people. There's a couple of returning characters, but at least one that I can see in the trailer. But
so my first question was, when is this set in the established timeline?
Right before the events of Episode 4. Right before Star Wars. This is the...
I thought that might be.
Yeah, this is the story of the Rebels getting the Death Star plans.
Okay.
And which means we probably will see many Bothan spies.
No, that's the Death Star 2.
Oh, the Death Star 2 is many Bothan spies?
Yes, many Bothans. Okay. Yep.
Well, darn, I was all set to see some Bothan spies. That's it, they're not getting my money.
So I understand my question sounds like I'm poo-pooing it. I'm not. This thing looks beautiful. It's just got that gritty realism to it. It's got the spy thriller thing going on with it. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing. And Forrest Whitaker absolutely belongs in this universe.
It looks so good. Mm-hmm. It gave me Forrest Whitaker eyes.
Yeah. it looks great. But my confusion is, okay, so we remember Star Wars. And we remember all these stormtroopers were clones. And they were the same in every outfit.
No.
They weren't clones.
Not by that. Well.
Yes, right? They were buying, the Clone War was over.
The, right? I mean, the problem is that there is mixed canon.
Okay. Exactly. Yep.
Right.
In the old canon before the Disney acquisition, the story went that they were clones for a while, but they continued to have issues with the clones like we've seen in the Clone Wars, and they started to phase them out. So some of them were clones, and some of them were just recruits.
Okay.
Now in this new canon, because of Episode 7, they've established that at least the First Order has been taking them from families as young children, you know, as like little kids, and they raise them up to be stormtroopers. So that's really all the detail I think we have at this point, though. So I guess what I would say is it's safe to assume that at this point in the storyline, they're not all clones, though there may still be some clones around, kind of thing.
I can take that. Fair enough.
We have another strong female lead, which some people on the internet, of course, are starting to take issue with. Some of the haters, some of the trolls.
Basement dwellers, if you will.
That's right. I guess I shouldn't necessarily say that because maybe, you know, maybe that's an opinion of someone on the panel here. But and if it is, jump in, especially now that I've given you such a great platform to step on.
I like it when ladies are on top. I'm so
sorry. No, Charles.
No, me. Bad
get in
me.
The corner. 5 minutes.
Right, exactly.
Here it is, Mike.
We had 5 minutes.
See, this is what I get when I support strong female leads. I get put in the corner. These guys are all...
It's all right, chauvinist. Charles. Uh-huh. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Uh-huh. That's right. You lift me up, Paul.
We get to see Mon Mothma. Yeah.
She looks incredible too. Like I don't the lady portraying her. That's almost a dead on.
It really is. They really found an actress who looks a lot like the original.
We're talking
original.
About clones here. Like, come on.
Yeah, an incredible job finding an actress to look like the original. We see the Death Star's, this is the thing that blew me away, seeing the Death Star's satellite dish sliding into place.
Yeah.
It's like it's a sunroof.
Assembling on
a
like a Lego assembly kit or something like that.
It's like I'm looking in two directions at once. So good.
Yeah. So obviously the, you know, all the excitement over episode 7, there was kind of this little, I don't know, not a lull on the other side of it thinking, oh my God, we're going to have, it's not going to be the next movie where we find out about Luke Skywalker and Rey and the lightsaber and, you know, Luke being in isolation all these years and stuff. Cause we have this other movie that we're going to have to wait for. Mm-hmm. But now that I've seen it, dude, I don't mind waiting. I mean, I'm fine with the episode 8 taking a few more years before I get that, you know, continuation, because this looks great. The trailer does that great thing that they did with the Prometheus trailer, where the alarm sounding is kind of like a chime going throughout part of the trailer. I think that was one of the best things about Prometheus was the trailer. Mm-hmm. And they do that to great effect with this one. It looks great. I couldn't be more excited to see this thing.
But tell me that great Forrest Whitaker line towards the end didn't sound exactly like Batman. If you keep rebelling or fighting, I forget exactly. I just watched the trailer. I haven't seen enough to memorize the line yet, but basically like you keep fighting, who will you become? Who will you be? There's not many good people left in this universe. And how
and
many
then
stayed
they
that
show
way?
Her, it's they like, show the main character with an Empire uniform on at the end there.
Yeah. But the line sounds just like Batman's, you know, or yeah. Well, how many good men were in Gotham? How many stayed that way? Line. It did. It just struck me as odd. I loved it. Thought it was great.
If only he said it in a raspy voice.
As far as Whitaker, he says everything in a raspy voice. Serious question, though. Bible movies and Star Wars. Why is everybody in those universes English? Like from England, English, except for Forrest Whitaker. Have you noticed that the lead actress has that English accent? Everybody else that speaks has that English accent.
Kind of stemmed from the first movies, which were filmed at Elstree Studios in London. So a lot of the extras were British. And I think they just said, I guess it would be too jarring to start bringing in a lot of American actors.
Maybe.
You know, and overrunning, because you're used to the Empire all sounding like a bunch of posh.
Right.
Lord Vader, they've actually escaped by going into light speed.
And they totally did that in Force Awakens. They had the Harry Potter reject be the cap-wearing guy.
That was a
film.
Weasley brother, sir. That was a Weasley
no,
brother.
No, he tried out for the Weasley brothers and couldn't cut it.
Who are you talking about?
Nux. Nux was a Weasley.
Yeah. He's the dragon.
No, he
wasn't. Weasley.
Was he a Weasley?
Yes. Yeah, he was Weasley. He was one of the older brother Weasleys that you barely
no, he wasn't.
See. The-
no, yes. No, he was not. No.
IMDb.
You guys are dead wrong.
I will go ahead and wait. We'll take the dead air that it requires Paul to admit that he's wrong.
No, I am not wrong. He's not a Weasley brother.
All right, I'm IMDb.
He's the guy
in
who
this
was
one.
In Ex Machina.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
That is not one of the Weasley brothers. I assure you, I promise.
IMDb.com.
I'm going there. I'm on it.
This is going to be so exhilarating when all three of you are f***ing wrong.
I said he wasn't.
My goodness.
I said he was a Harry Potter reject, is what I said.
And he's a fine actor. Now, thank
you. I'm going to let you guys look at this up. So I want to see this.
Right. Somebody.
Yep, I'm working on it right now.
I'm on it, but it's just going to take me a minute to find it. But I think it's cool. I think it's fine. I definitely don't want a Poe Dameron like, "Hey y'all, I'm Poe. Let's go kill some rebels, man. Let's go." I don't want that at all.
I love your version of
Poe. You like that? Yeah, I'm Poe Dameron.
So in 2014, in Harry Potter and the Escape from Gringotts, he was Bill Weasley, because before that, in the Deathly Hallows Part 2 in 2011, he was Bill Weasley. In 2010, in the Deathly Hallows Part 1, he was, what's that guy's name again? Bill Weasley.
Is it Bill Weasley?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Man, you know what tastes so good?
Wrong. No, wait a minute.
Especially when somebody gloats about how excited they're going to be when we're wrong, it's
no,
even sweeter.
No, but you said he was one of the twins. He was
one of the Weasley brothers.
No, I said he was the dragon taming Weasley.
Oh, well, in that case.
Yeah.
Well, who said he was a twin? Because one of you said it. I heard it.
No, I said he was one of the Weasley brothers. The word twin, I never heard.
I was actually in the middle of all that going to ask if he was that third one. Well, fourth, I guess. That you only see in the one film and then part of that other film. But yeah.
Do the brakes on your bike trigger when you backpedal?
So
I heard one of you say he was one of the twins. So screw you guys.
I'm not sure about you, Brian, but three of my favorite words in the world are "you're right." You are right. Paul,
which you will not hear on this show today.
Longtime listener, first time contributor Perry has this editorial response to Paul's previous comments.
Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong.
All right, back to Rogue One. Any other thoughts? I mean, it's such a brief flash. Oh, I mean, some of the walkers.
Yeah. Yes, the walkers, and then focusing down to get like three guys that are running at a walker. It's just the contempt that those commanders are showing for ground troops. I love it. Mm-hmm. No, I was super excited because one of the jarring things for me as they were shifting over to Disney is, and it's one of those longtime geek things, is not getting that 3-year break between my Star Wars movies. And now I'm absolutely okay with them giving me two anthology movies in between every third year.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Because what's after this? Is it the standalone Han Solo?
I think it's Han Solo, but I know the Boba Fett one. Well, no, because isn't it still rumor between Boba Fett and an Obi-Wan? I don't think that's
is been. Is it? Okay.
Yeah. So, but I believe Han Solo is next.
That's great.
So that'll be 2018.
It's such a great time to be a Star Wars fan.
But it can't be Harrison Ford, right? It has to be a young Han Solo, yeah?
Right, it's going to be a young Han Solo.
And what were there, like 2,500 people that auditioned for it that they look at?
But the only one that's worth his salt is Chris Pratt. Perfect. I mean, he's born to play that role, man.
But he's not young enough. Paul had a good point the last time we talked about that, is you can't have him.
Oh, you hear that, Paul? He said you're right.
No, he said I had a good point, Charles.
We're not afraid to admit it.
Yeah.
Charles, we have to be extremely factually accurate from this point further in the show. Because the taste of my foot is quite not good. So,
Chris Pratt's got the right attitude, but is just the wrong, I think, the wrong age.
A little too late.
How old was Harrison Ford when he did the original?
He was like 30-something. He was the oldest of the,
early
of the
30s.
Three.
Right.
Early
so 30s where's this supposed to say? Is this supposed to be pre-meeting them?
I don't think it's going to be toddler Han Solo. I mean, I think it's going to be
that'd be hilarious.
Formative age playing Sabacc with Lando Calrissian, winning the Millennium Falcon.
That's called guitar.
I would assume we'd see that transition if they stick to old canon. We'll see his entrance into the Imperial Academy before he decides to leave, and how they do that. So.
Wow! Right. Yeah, because they haven't said that. I guess they said all the books, right? But I mean, Han Solo at Star's End, that trilogy.
Mm-hmm. There's the original, and then there's the other trilogy.
Interesting. Well, cool. All right. So Rogue One, we're going to be keeping our eyes on that. Of course, another a trailer will be forthcoming soon. And can't
Force
wait to see
coming.
More. Force coming. Speaking of. Yep.
Can I just say, though, like, despite all of this crying on the internet from these dude bros who don't like the lead,
right.
Were you not as blown away by her as I was? Because I was like, she really came across as like a forceful, fierce woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Is this not a rebellion? I rebel.
Oh, yeah, dude. I was fist pumping at that point. I was like, yes! Yes!
Yes, exactly. I mean, she's the Joan Jett to Daisy Ridley's Olivia Newton-John.
That's nice. Nice reference. Holy cow. Points for that, sir. All right.
Points for Gryffindor?
We'd like to hear your thoughts on this trailer as well. BTP at giantsizeteamup.com. That's breaking the panel, right? BTP at giantsizeteamup.com.
Oh, is that what that stands for?
Yeah, you know, people are like, what did he say? E-E-E? No, fools, is breaking the panel. BTP at giantsizeteamup.com. Email us, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. So,
all right. Well, before we get to our next headline, let's talk a little bit about the sponsor for today's episode of BTP. Like, you know, you like your Star Wars stuff. We know you like your comic book stuff. We know you like your Doctor Who stuff. And it's even better when it's all a mystery and it just arrives in your mailbox once a month. Well, how can people enjoy something like that, Charles? How can people get their hands on all this great exclusive merchandise?
You're one of the best services out there. Among great services, but one of the best ones out there is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. And this month is all about the Quest. We're forming a party to explore. Hey,
it's a Nissan. Wait. This is all about like Nissan cars, like a specific Nissan model.
Like you would hate that coming in your mailbox, but it's only a piece at a time. So after 20 years, you finally can muffler. Build it.
You have a muffler.
This month, you've got until the middle of the month, just past the middle of the month, each month to get the next month's box. That'd be the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to get that month's box. But then if you miss that, if you go to the 20th, you're out until the following month. You can't get it. Sometimes they come back on sale, but in order to get it, you need to get it now. This month, it's April. Excuse me. You can get stuff from The Labyrinth, Harry Potter, History Channel's Vikings, and much like Paul Klotz's Facts, Uncharted 4. And, of course, there's always the T-shirt and the loot pin to let you show off all your gear when you go out. So check it out. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save $3 off of any new subscription. Again, that's lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up. You'll help us out, and you'll get $3 off any new subscription. So do that now.
All right. So next month we're a little less than a month away from Civil War, right? That's like the beginning of May.
May 6th.
We're going to get to see Spider-Man in his first non-Sony film appearance in a long time. I guess ever. Because even the earliest appearances of Spider-Man were with the 70s TV show. So I guess we've never had a movie performance of Spider-Man that wasn't...
please go YouTube the crap out of that. That thing is hilarious.
Right. Or the Japanese Spider-Man and stuff like that. Yeah. But... so Marvel is getting their hands on Spider-Man, and then it goes back to Sony with Marvel's assistance, so to speak, the more of a collaborative effort going forward. And Sony has registered the URL SpidermanHomecomingTheMovie.com, which currently redirects to Sony Pictures. And it does seem to indicate that Sony is at least considering naming something Spider-Man Homecoming. One might presume it's the next live action film, but it also could be the animated Spider-Man movie that's going to be coming from Phil Lord and Chris Miller. It could be a potential title for either film, and Sony is just nabbing the website now before someone can poach them while they consider their options. So Spider-Man Homecoming, what do we think of this? Is it just him, you know, them reinforcing the fact that he's in high school and that he needs somebody to ask to the date? Rest to the dance.
Oh man, I really hope it's another opportunity to pursue the origin story.
We really need to see that because I'm not super clear on this.
How does Spider-Man get his powers again?
Before
I think
before
he gets
you
it
go
from
that
a
route,
hoodie.
Before you go that route, oh, I complained about Batman's origin story on the BVS episode, and you poo-pooed me.
Well, you were wrong. It took a minute and 45 seconds to let everybody who doesn't know who the hell Batman is go, oh, yeah.
We can do that with Spider-Man and be okay. No complaints, right?
Yes, actually.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they want to do the origin story in the opening credits again, that's fine.
Well, the way they just did Spider-Man 2 with the comic panels kind of thing.
Yeah, let's just not devote, you know, half of an entire film to an origin story that we've seen twice
now,
already.
Here's where, Chris, I'll be on Team Wisdom. If we spend a complete and total added up time of 5 minutes or more crying about Uncle Ben in this film, I am done. We get it. Have a moment, have a reference. But you know, they ham fisted that in every movie almost of, mm-hmm. Uncle Ben this and Uncle Ben that. It's like, shut up, his successful rice line. Get over it. Come on.
You know, not for nothing, but have you ever lost an uncle because you were irresponsible and childish?
I wish I had, so I'd have a comeback.
So how can you know his struggle? You need to check your privilege, sir. Check your privilege.
Right.
Hashtag McFall world problems.
Feel the burn. Yeah.
With great power comes great McFall.
But they did play that line way too much in the original with
the line, though. Like, that is the Spider-Man line.
You know, I flipped through more than my fair share of Spider-Man books. It's not in every other panel in those books. It's barely in most of them. Just saying.
Right. Right. But, you know, when you've got a 2-hour film, you do try and work that as the underlying theme of the whole thing. He chooses
how many times
to do
has
that.
Batman said, I'm Batman?
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's cool. Right.
Well, but and it's a core principle of Spider-Man, and based on Charles's love and appreciation for BVS, I can understand why he dislikes core principles of characters in movies. I'm not exactly sure why Paul's
come on it. And slam. What was the rule? First one in, first one fired. Last one in, whatever.
Oh, you were loving it earlier when I was wrong and he was right.
I had your back, man.
You guys were carrying him on your shoulders, and here we are.
I had your back. I looked up to see if Spider-Man Homecoming is a story arc in the Spider-Man in the books, rather. And it says it's not necessarily an arc, but number 252 was titled Homecoming. The Amazing Spider-Man, published in 1984, and it was released after Marvel's first Secret Wars crossover. Okay. And it features Spider-Man returning to a neighborhood in his infamous black symbiote suit and begins a new arc with Black Cat and Kingpin. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it could, obviously.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't see them opening a new quote-unquote reboot of the film with the symbiote storyline, since they did that with Spider-Man 3. Here's some other things.
Swinging,
what's that?
If they came out of the gate swinging, though, oh, that'd be
awesome.
It'd
be great to jump into a story. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about that another show, TMS today, that if they were ever to do another Fantastic Four reboot, and we know they probably will at some point, let's not have the origin there either. Let's jump into these guys are already established. They're already doing their thing. They're already working with New York and already as established heroes, and jump into a story with them and Mole Man or Dr. Doom or whatever, and not have to devote so much time to
that. Let's not do Doom. Let's just.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We've had enough Doom. Let's do a real Galactus story where they actually have to protect.
If we had another film with Doom in it, Chris might cry again.
Sony has also registered a couple other domains. Let me get to those really quick. Spider-Man Coming of Age, Spider-Man Greatness Awaits, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Spider-Man Suspended. Looks like there are a couple other ones here. Spider-Man, yes, again. Spider-Man, I'm going out for coffee. And Spider-Man, who's left?
Spider-Man, not Uncle Paul Ben. Was wrong.
I want to see a real Rhino story here.
You know? Oh, not the Paul Giamatti in a metal
Russian mobster.
How can such a guy who can deliver such great performances get reduced to that?
Yeah,
that hurt
wasn't so much. If that wasn't like he did a bad job,
it wasn't. He did a great job at being crap because they wrote crap for him.
I feel like that movie, that second ASM movie, was like 50% awesome and then 50%, oh shit, we have to put this movie out. Like, finish it all quick. Finish it quick.
It's almost like they, and I'm being serious, it's almost like they get started and they're excited. And then about halfway through, they're just like, why bother? Because we're going under and everything's going to crap and nobody's going to, you know. Because they did know at that point, I mean, I don't know if that really affected, but they did know that they were struggling to stay alive. And they did know they were already making a deal with Marvel. I think sometime around then, it had to be.
Oh, you know? No, it was after that. It was.
The deal with Marvel was in play
long before we even knew about it.
Yeah, but we didn't know about it until the Sony leaks.
Yeah,
until the email leaks.
That's true, right? Yeah. The internship leaks.
But that was, that ball got rolling because of the second film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, like, because they were going to do the Sinister Six movie,
and they set it all up at the end.
Standalone, yeah. All right, well, let's continue on here. Somebody else want to read the next headline? Shouldn't I don't want to, you know.
Do you want to mess it up or Wisdom? I can't. I can't do anything right,
so I think Chris should do it. Okay,
so the next headline is that the Flash movie could co-star another DC movie superhero. So, in an article with Forbes, Deborah Snyder specifically name-checked Ray Fisher's Cyborg as playing a part in the Flash movie. She's quoted as saying, as you can imagine, when we get to the Flash movie, Ezra Miller and Ray Fisher, who plays Cyborg, are kind of our youngest characters, and they have a really nice camaraderie with each other. Ezra is super funny, so the tone of that film will be very different than the rest of them. So, that kind of alleviates some of my fears that they want to go too dark and too serious with the DC movies, but then it also goes directly to one of my problems that they seem to be in backtracking mode, because that was one of the tenets of the Bible that they set forth, was they weren't going to be funny.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
That's an official statement from what was that last year that came out? Because they wanted to separate themselves from Marvel so much that they weren't going to do these funny movies.
Wow. Well, mission accomplished.
Basically, no joke. I mean, yeah. That wasn't Zack Snyder came out. It was one of the big names, though.
I was thinking it was one of the, not a studio head, but one of the producers, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're correct. DC On Screen would definitely know. That's exactly, I heard they reported it as news when it happened and gave all the quotes. But yeah, it was like, no jokes. Marvel's all about the funny. We're just going to be dark and gritty. And that was the mandate sent down for all these scripts, was basically no jokes. I'm looking up Ezra Miller because I'm honestly very unfamiliar with him and his acting and his stuff. And I'm looking.
Well, he was also a Weasley brother. I couldn't even finish it without laughing.
So I have seen him because he was in Californication. I've seen all of those episodes, but I'd have to go back and see the episodes he was in. I haven't seen Trainwreck yet, but he was in that. I'm looking at the Perks of Being a Wallflower. I totally skipped, even though Hermione was in that, I believe. There's your Weasley connection right there, dude. Right there. I'm not seeing a whole lot that, like, other than Trainwreck, was like, oh yeah, that was a bigger movie. It made a big splash. I'm not seeing a whole lot of stuff that makes me go, oh yeah, he's hilarious. He's in Californication, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, Royal Pains. None of these are screaming hilarious here. You know.
He's, by the way, he is starring in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is the Harry Potter universe film.
Like I said,
all roads lead to Hogwarts. Apparently
today. There's your title, Chris. But in Cyborg, part of his origin story is being bitter and angry because he's had all the human parts ripped off of him.
His humanity taken away from him. Yeah. But Flash is always such, I mean, not just the whole Greg Berlanti, you know, Grant Gustin character, but Flash has kind of always had that humorous undertone with him. And so to take that, I would hope they wouldn't take that completely away from him for the movies.
He's the
comedy sidekick when you don't have Plastic Man or Blue Beetle around.
I do feel sad that he's gonna have that relationship with Cyborg and not Hal Jordan, but I'll take it.
He's, as far as the wittiness, he's the Spider-Man of DC. I think he does it better. His one-liners almost always make me laugh in the comics and in the movies. And Spider-Man is just a this little snot-nosed punk, man. His one-liners are bad. I hate it.
Get out.
Who is this guy?
Seriously.
What have you done with Charles McFall?
I hate Spider-Man. I hate Spider-Man.
You're doing a really good job of taking all the heat off of me now.
You're welcome, sir.
You have done stepped in the pile, sir. Spider-Man is the classic jokester. The classic.
He's horrible at it.
No.
He is horrible.
No.
In fact, there are some of the animations that make a point of that. It's like, I've got to keep on rotation as a one-liner. And everybody, Tony Stark and Nick Fury, everyone's like, dude, they're horrible jokes. And they just really are. But when he's done right, they can be okay. But he's no Flash, sir. He's just no Flash.
No. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know
how
you could
be. I think we've got a 3-to-1 situation here.
I'm used to it. It's
You're
okay.
So wrong. You probably think somebody's a Weasley brother.
Oh my god. I would love, dude, in a comic book fashion, they could totally do a buddy cop film with this.
That is when I first heard that Cyborg would be in this film with him, I was totally like, oh, we're talking about a buddy cop film then, right? Because that'd be great.
That would be great, right?
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the way from the early talks of the Green Lantern Corps movie. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's what I perceived there. So maybe we'll get one of those Rush Hour versus Lethal Weapon setups here.
Oh, interesting.
You get to choose your flavor of buddy cop movie.
Mm.
So we good? We good on this one?
I think we're good on this one. Anybody have anything else? Flash
Spider-Man.
Well, if you want to write in and tell me how wrong I am about the Flash, or better yet, if you really want to support me, think the Flash is better than Spider-Man, BTP@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. You can also go and support us over at Patreon.com/BreakingThePanel. That way you get your voice heard better. Because, you
people
know,
already, people already three paragraphs in to their response to you.
Yeah, they are. But if you grease the palms of the bouncer, then it gets red on air. That's all I'm saying. So patreon.com/breakingthepanel will help us out, and we will love
buy a loot crate. I mean.
I'll read this next one.
Sure.
Freeform Green Lights Marvel Romance Superhero Series Cloak and Dagger. The youngest skewing ABC-owned network. Freeform is.
Freeform is a new network. It's replacing ABC Family. It's like
good.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yes. They need to get away from that boat anchor of a name.
Yeah. Because there was some decent stuff on it, but it's like a Hallmark movie, right? Or Lifetime. Right. You know what you're getting when you tune into Lifetime. You knew what you're getting when you tune into Family, ABC Family. So good. Okay, Freeform. All right. Cool. Thank you. I did not know there was a new network. So the youngest skewing ABC-owned network has greenlit Marvel's Cloak and Dagger with a straight-to-series order. Variety has exclusively learned. Well, not anymore because you shared it with the world, dude.
That's right.
Described as a superhero love story, Cloak and Dagger is based on a I hate when they use this word, titular comic book duo known as Tandy Bowen and Tyrone Johnson.
Have you seen her costume? I think it's appropriate.
But tell me the opening theme song is not going to be Tyrone by Erykah Badu. Come on.
I'm sure it won't.
Who then they have appeared in Marvel Comics classics, including Spider-Man and X-Men stories. The live-action interracial romance follows a duo, two teenagers from very different backgrounds, who find themselves burdened and awakened to newly acquired superpowers while falling in love. Tandy can emit light daggers, and Tyrone has the ability to engulf others in darkness. They quickly learn they are better together than apart, but their feelings for each other. Have made their already complicated world even more challenging. This sounds 50-50. 50%, mm-hmm. Hell yeah, awesome. More Marvel TV. Let's do that. And the other 50% is ABC Family doing love stories.
Right.
I'm all about Cloak and Dagger. I'm not about more teen drama.
I'm with this, and I just want them to go ahead and just say what they're doing. So it needs to be called Cloak and Dagger, and the subtitle of the series is, it's going to be CW, We're Coming For You.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this raises a concern I have. Is everybody current on Arrow right now?
Yes.
I might be an episode behind, but you can talk about it. It's fine.
Okay. I didn't watch this episode yet, but I will say this. this season has taken a severe turn in the wrong direction for me.
Agreed.
It has gone like this whole turn of spoilers, you know, 2 minute bleep if you don't want to hear spoilers for the season of Arrow. This whole turn with Felicity getting cold feet and everything is beyond obnoxious. It was chugging along. It was getting momentum again. I really liked where the story was going. I was fine with the romance angle. Everything seemed fine. And then they had to pull it right back into the CW BS that they're so accustomed to. And it is literally ruining the series for me.
Yeah. This whole will they, won't they, and... You know, Ollie's lying about this kid that he has with another woman.
The whole thing is a preposterous situation anyways.
Yes.
Because to me, Felicity Smoke is not a character who finds out about that and draws the line in the sand and says, well, you lied to me. Felicity Smoke is a reasonable person who understands that this is a child's life we're talking about and his ability to be involved in his son's life. That is absolutely something worth lying about. And I think any parent or potential parent would agree with that. That's why I find this so alarming and just absurd.
So, all right. So, going along with that, I got to touch on that too. Going along with that, they wrote two great things into this story arc. One was the Flash traveling back in time and telling him, no, don't tell her because it ruins everything for you and then you die. So, don't do that. And then the second was bringing the mother into the Arrow cave. And having her, you know, they're rescuing the kid and all this other stuff, and having her flat out say, it was me all along. He wanted to tell you. He begged me over and over, and I said no. And then to have that whole thing, we just can't do this. And then the big moment was she walked out on him.
That was so.
Oh my God.
So contrived.
Grab some male grown ass women and men, adults, and have them write the script, please, because this is.
That was so I'm a strong, independent, no longer crippled woman, and I don't need no man moment.
Right.
And
but
I
was failed. Just like,
how Felicity got her groove back.
Because in reality, in reality, they both would have lost the moment of each other and would have celebrated that and when pulled together briefly. And they didn't even do that. She just kept walking right out the door. I'm like, no freaking way, man. Never. That is, I'm with you, Carl.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that has more to do with it being Curtis Holt's fault, and his superhero name in Arrow needs to just be Mr. Not Terrific Timing, because that's when the thing decided to work and she could walk. Yeah.
Right.
So,
in any case, because of that, I do not want a romance superhero show.
Right.
Get out. No,
and that was the thing with Cloak and Dagger. It was so never part of the forefront, or at least it never appeared to be the original limited series and their appearances and all the other comics that it was a relationship. They had this bond because they were kind of rescued from the streets, but their rescue turned into this whole drug thing that while it gave them powers, it also kind of kept them on the run and was something they had to grow from. And
that's the other thing is Cloak and Dagger. These aren't yay love
type
characters. Mm-hmm. These are dark, gritty, street level characters. And they always have been, you know, like these characters fit better in a Daredevil.
Absolutely.
You know, Luke Cage type. Netflix scenario.
With that romance thing going on.
These shouldn't go anywhere near ABC. Let alone ABC Family or anything like that.
Well, so hopefully, being that they're changing it to Freeform, that they might be trying to establish, hey, no, look, we are different than ABC Family.
And they might as long, if the lead-in is still Seventh Heaven, then it's still
Oh, no.
Here's the twist. Whatever, I can't remember Jennifer, whatever her name was, it was Seventh Heaven. She's the new lead as Tandy at 40-something years old.
What's interesting about this is they've gone straight to a series order. No pilot. You know, we're ready for all 12, 13 episodes, whatever, if they're doing a half season or if they're going to do a full season. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Mockingbird series. Just got a pilot order. Marvel's Most Wanted. Is that what it's called?
Yep, Marvel's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
And that seems like such a stronger, a show that seems to have so much more of a stronger potential for success.
And on that side note, Has everybody caught up with the latest S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes.
Tears, right?
No.
Yes.
Tears? Not this. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I didn't see this week's. No,
not this week's. It was 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about
Despise
that.
Despise Goodbye. Week. I can say that.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tears, yeah. Mac, man, broke my heart. Yeah. I had total bro tears going on in that moment. I was like, yeah.
Even my wife, who's jaded to the superhero stuff, she likes it and she watches most of it for me, and then she sits there and makes comments about how cheesy it is, and I have to shut her up. But even then, at that moment, she's like, none of us cry, but we're like, wow, man.
Yeah. It was such a well-done scene. It really was so powerful. Good. Really powerful. Yeah.
And like, how do you not end the season on that? How do you come back from the break?
Yeah, with that? See, that was the other thing, is I'm like, why are you doing that in the middle of the season? Like, that's a that's a last episode. I also didn't like the whole setup as to why things went the way they did. I hated that. I thought that could have been written much better.
I love that they brought out the whole such deep loyalty that they figuratively bit the bullet.
I liked that part, but I didn't like the context leading up to it. It was so absurd to me that that would be the event that forces their hand on their identities and everything. I'm like,
I gotcha.
They've been everywhere. They've done everything. You're telling me before this, nobody knew who they were. She was a mole in Hydra, and they knew she was a mole in Hydra. Why would this change anything? You know what I mean? To me, I was just like, this doesn't make any sense to me. That I hated that part of it. I mentioned that the day I saw it to my roommate, I was like, this doesn't. He disagreed with me, but he generally goes with the flow on everything. Like, he doesn't ever question things like that. But I was just like, this doesn't make any sense to me. The rest of it did, though. Totally. That the spy send off and everything was fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Cloak and Dagger. It's going to be interesting.
Coming to a family-owned network.
Coming to canceled after a season.
If they two drug-addled kids. If they can't make it, who can?
That's awesome. My personal last thing on it, and you guys can have last notes on this as well, of course. My personal last thing, if they handle it like the romance between Black Widow and the Hulk in the movies, if they handle it like Matt Murdock and the secretary, I forget her name, if they handle it on those levels, like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, if they handle the writing anywhere near those levels.
Vigorous humping?
There's that.
I'm sure I just meant that on ABC Family.
The dynamics. The dynamics and how
I'm loving this new Freeform channel.
All right, assholes. Klaus, why don't you take this next one about Captain America? That looks awesome.
I was going to say, speaking of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage's relationship, but never mind.
Go for it, Wisdom. I don't care. Somebody else.
No. New Captain America Civil War casting suggests a Netflix crossover. That's a mouthful. Although Marvel has always maintained that their world is, quote unquote, all connected, the disconnect between the studio's movies and TV shows have become increasingly apparent. They don't want to pay those movie star money.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
However, some late Captain America Civil War casting announcements could indicate that the problematic relationship might be changing for the better. A press email sent earlier this week via comingsoon.net does not sound like a movie site. Just saying that. listed Elfrid Woodward among the Civil War cast members who will be attending the Los Angeles premiere. Woodward was expected to make her MCU debut in the Netflix series Luke Cage as Mariah Dillard, and here's where things get a little confusing. Screen Crusher reporting that Woodward will not be playing Dillard in Civil War. In what would be a great homage to the Civil War comic, Woodward's character is instead the mother of an American citizen who was killed in the Sokovia incident in Avengers Age of Ultron, and she will confront Tony Stark and blame him for her kid's death in one of Civil War's early scenes.
This will be
a big motivator for Tony to back the Sokovia Accords.
Right.
The plot thickens.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be connected, but they don't really, aside from season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and the occasional mention of the things that have happened, they haven't really done anything to do any real crossover work.
However,
which is actually, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That is a pivotal moment in the Civil War books, and one of the motivating factors, one of the major linchpins to this whole story is the mother who represents everybody who lost in the tragedy. In this case, we're using Sokovia instead of the Stamford incident. Mm-hmm. But yes, she pushed Tony. She got Tony to do things. And at the end, Tony puts her in charge of, well, in the books, it's in charge of basically the civilian arm of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, watchdog group, if you will. Not the watchdogs, because that term's been taken, but somebody to oversee what goes on with the new S.H.I.E.L.D. And so on and so forth. Dillard, so what is Dillard supposed to be? She's supposed to be, who is Mariah Dillard? Do we even know as a character?
I don't know, no. Who she is in, like, the Luke Cage.
Right.
Lore.
I'm going to IMDb it real quick, or I'm going to throw it out there. But
yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it really quick.
Okay, so it could easily, it could be a nice crossover, which would be a huge anchor if she ends up being a character from the movie that then plays into the Luke Cage universe directly. That would be the anchor. That would be awesome. That would tag in. Because they need to connect this better.
Mariah Dillard is a powerful woman in local Harlem politics. She's looking to bring a new era of change to the streets that she grew up on. Her personal life and professional career are thrown into turmoil by both Harlem's newest hero, Luke Cage, as well as her cousin Cottonmouth's nefarious acts. So that's the comic and presumably the TV wiki entry for Mariah Dillard. So very different than the character they're describing in Civil War, which is a bummer. I mean, can they not find another actress who could play that so that they could? Because that takes you out of the film. I mean, obviously neither one of them is or at least the Civil War character is not going to be a focal recurring character going forward in the cinematic universe. But it kind of burns the bridge to use her in the future if in the Luke Cage series, she's going to be playing somebody else regularly and being a very prominent character in the Luke Cage series. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there's so many people out there who want to give the role to somebody who can, who isn't conflicted by appearing as somebody else in a different Marvel, cinematic, performance.
Cause would you guys agree that that'd be a very bad move to have the same actress or actor play two different characters in this universe?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It breaks.
I mean,
it's right?
It's like the Chris Evans, Human Torch, Chris Evans, Captain America thing. Granted, they're two different studios, but
yes, it was.
That was the worry at the very beginning. It's like, oh man, but, you know, Captain America, Chris Evans, Captain America has made you forget all about that stinking pile of horse crap that was the.
That's the interesting part, to be honest, is that his performance has been so different and on point that you don't think of him as that other character.
So true.
Yeah.
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 So I've been really impressed by that personally.
But that was also before they even built a unified universe. Like now, you know, if you see somebody appear in any of the Batman or Superman movies or Wonder Woman, any of the stuff going forward in DC, they will contractually never be in the Marvel universe. Or not never, but probably not. Right.
Oh, I don't think that's the case between DC and Marvel. I don't think there's any reason for that.
Well, do you really think... You not side characters so much, but you think that Mackie, Anthony Mackie, who plays the Falcon, who is recognizable but not an A-list or Avenger yet, do you think you would see him show up in, say, Wonder Woman film?
I would hazard a guess that there's a non-compete clause in
those contracts. There's probably a non-compete clause, but I don't know if it would cover everybody who's on the TV shows or people who are in lesser roles. Obviously,
so like we see Hunter in a DC property.
We saw Ryan Reynolds as both the Green Lantern and Deadpool.
Again, so that was before the universes.
Right, right.
Right. And Deadpool's not part of a universe either.
It's still outside.
There's a Green Lantern.
Right, exactly.
Oh. I mean,
I'll withdraw that example completely then.
Objection withdrawn.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, for example, I'm trying to think of somebody who's like recognizable that played a small role. Okay, the person who played Strucker.
Okay.
I forget his name.
I know you're talking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If there was cause to cast him for something in one of the DC films or on one of the DC shows, I would think at this point he's probably fulfilled his obligation and there's probably no reason why he couldn't be in one of those movies as one of those characters. I don't think he's a prominent enough character anymore that would be a conflict for him. Now, I don't know what their contracts actually say, but it's a pretty tough sell to lock people into a contract where they can't do any other stuff ever for another studio once you're done with them, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, they can do that with the mains, but it's really hard to enforce that with like.
Yeah, you're not going to see Chris Evans pop into a DC property film.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Or RDJ, or an even after they're done, like once we're kind of finished with them, if you will. I don't think they'll show up in DC or anything like that. I'm sure their contracts, when your contracts are in the millions of dollars, I think that's when you get to push that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the bit people and side characters and stuff like that, I'm sure they can appear in other properties.
I don't know. I think RDJ has been cast as Darkseid. I'm just saying.
Sure.
Yeah. Cause I mean like, Zaz from, Zaz is a good example. Zaz from, Gotham.
From Gotham.
Uh-huh. Was one of the early villains on Flash too.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I know that's DC, but they're not connected, you know,
they're separate universes
technically. So I don't think it's as ironclad. Now that being said though, perhaps people who have appeared in Disney/Marvel stuff are the ones that are going to have a lot more rigidity in that regard. I would think maybe Warner Brothers isn't so tight-fisted, or whichever, you know, CW or whoever is signing them for these shows and stuff.
Well, if we see what Disney has done with their Disney Channel stars, and as they've grown up, they try to purchase your soul.
Oh yeah. Disney has the business acumen of trying to lock everything down.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating at times, but I understand it. I think everybody as a whole, like the whole industry, especially anybody who's dealing with comic properties or anything in that realm, are now really cautious about ending up in a situation anywhere near what Marvel is dealing with Fox and Sony.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone who has a major hot property at this point is ever interested in getting in that kind of a situation where your intellectual property is literally split amongst multiple moms and dads and step parents all that business. Yeah.
Can you imagine? We're having a difficulty with this and we're just fans. Can you imagine the actual writers and people trying to do it with the lawyers and the heads of studios and this, oh my God, the headaches.
I think,
honestly, I'm sorry, they can't mention Wakanda. Nope, sorry, they can't.
Yeah.
Oh
my I think goodness. The toughest, the people who are in the toughest seat for that are the writers for the actual comic books.
Yeah, okay, I get you.
Oh, sure.
I get you.
Sure.
You know, and video game developers also to a certain degree as well. But I think it's really the writers of the comic books because they've literally been read the Riot Act. They've been told, we need to downplay these characters. These characters are not our focus anymore. They still exist in our world. They're still our characters, but focus on the, you know, so no more mutants push Inhumans. No more, you know, Fantastic Four push Avengers, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and that's really, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say they're stuck in this mode of, wait, these are the guys that got us out of bankruptcy. These are guys that floated us.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Made us.
Thanks for the help, Sony. Now,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, obviously, the relationship with Sony is much less contentious at this point.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But the Fox situation is, I mean, the tone has kind of changed in some of the press I've seen out there recently. I don't think the war is as hot and heated as it was 6 months to a year ago. And I think maybe we'll see some loosening in that regard. But because I think the Fantastic Four for Fox was like, this was a clear sign. It's like, you can't just throw anything out there and get away with it at this point, you know? So I think they realized that, okay, maybe we need to carefully cultivate what we're working on here. I'd like to think. I say that because Fox is legendary for dumping all over solid properties and just steering them in the wrong direction. This is pretty much uncharted territory, though, if you really think about it. Hollywood and TV production has never been in this situation before where you have these linked properties that are so big, so over. I mean, what's the closest thing to it? Like CSI and Law and Order. And even those are the kind of shows where they don't care if they cast the same people. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, a bunch of them have, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we've never seen this before where like, I don't know that you can lock somebody out of working ever again. You know what I mean? Like, because you did a Marvel film, you can't work for any of the competition ever again. Yeah. You can't work for Fox. You can't work for Sony. You can't. No way. That's
sensitive.
And not just from, and I would say it doesn't just come from one direction. If you're working on a Marvel movie and you have to sign a non-compete, depending on the importance of your role, if you want to go into transition into a DC role later, it's not just going to be Fox that's saying no to it. DC's going to be like, I don't know if we can cast you in this because they're going to.
Yep. So totally. So yeah, it's
kind of screwed.
I bet it presents some really interesting choices for these actors and actresses. You know, those who are like, what parts do I audition for? You know, what do I really try to go after? Because if you get hooked as a, like, let's say you're talking about something like the Netflix series where you get hooked as a relatively minor character, but somebody who could have some legs later on, and they bring you in, they do a couple episodes with you or whatever, and then it doesn't work out, like they go a different direction with the writing or something, mm-hmm. and you're still kind of technically that person in the MCU's mind, and you've signed a non-compete clause, and now you can't work for half the other companies or at least anything in the similar.
Well, in that genre, yeah. Yeah.
That's tough. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, that's got to be a really rough situation to end up in.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I think it's got to be pretty tough on some of the actors and actresses, especially those going out for smaller roles that aren't really marquee, you know, tentpole type positions.
So, all right, we gotta wrap this up. We've got two great quick headlines here. I love this one. Peter Capaldi talks about the attitude of the next Doctor Who companion. Man, I hate when they change the companions. I love when they change them because, you know, you fall in love with the character right. or whatever, and then they're gone. And I named my daughter after this last one, and, you know, one of her middle names. My wife wouldn't let me do the full name, but I named her Oswin after Claire Oswald. Because when you first get introduced to her, she's Oswin Oswald. You know, Oz for the win, Oswin. Anyway, but I do love when they bring in new ones because then you get those new characters. So here's right. what he says in a new video interview. I think the companion has to be someone who's not so impressed by the doctor. She's not an assistant. She's not a servant. She can't be that. She has to be someone who really says, are you sure that's the right thing to do? What are you doing? And also doesn't take him seriously. So it looks like we're going to be bringing back the redhead again. Not Amy.
Donna Mon. Noble.
Donna Noble. Yeah.
Donna Noble. Okay.
And I hate Donna Noble. I mean.
I grew to appreciate her, but she was the least yeah. favorite of all.
Yeah.
For sure.
She starts out being really annoying in the Christmas special, and then she does kind of grow on you after a while. Yeah.
But it's a great take. Oh, no. What do you think you're doing to me? I'm not having alien babies.
She's like, and she's probably the yeah. opposite end of the spectrum from this, too. Like, she not only just puts into question what he's doing, she flat out says, you're crazy. What's the matter with yeah. you?
So here's my thing mm-hmm. about a potential companion. I have said to a lot of my friends in this exact conversation, I think it's time to have a male companion.
Again, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like, as the doctor's
sole male companion.
Right.
Not a Rory or well,
not a Rory.
What about the general or whatever he was back? I'm talking about old school. He had, male and female, but wasn't there a general? It's that we have the daughter in this series. She runs, I'm stuck on Marvel. I want to say SHIELD, but she didn't run SHIELD. But her father was a companion of the
Torchwood. Yeah, I'm talking New Who, though.
You're just talking about, okay, yeah, you're right. We've not had a soul male companion.
Because the whole thing is, as I've said before on the show, New Who has this kind of like romantic undertone
yeah.
that I understand is a big part of its success, but I think it's time that they started doing it with Clara. They said she doesn't have to be the romantic interest, but there's love there, but it's not necessarily romantic love.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him get a quirky male companion. I mean, I'm also like, when they go on to cast the next doctor, I'm open to a female doctor. I think that would be fun.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to a female doctor with a male companion that is not romantic as
Haley
well.
Haley Atwell as a doctor.
Would be amazing, but I don't know that she would sign on to another major property.
Daisy Ridley as her companion.
Okay, well, that's never happening.
When Paul says quirky, I immediately think Abed from Community.
Oh!
That would be incredible.
That yes. would be really good. Yeah. Space-time right into Doctor Who.
Oh, yep, God. Right there.
Air high fives, Wisdom. Air high fives. Oh.
Okay. Yeah, no, but yeah, I mean, so that's my whole thing is I'd like to see a new take. I don't think we need more arm candy. I think it's time to do some interesting storytelling. And they've really gone a different direction with Capaldi. They went a different direction with Clara. With Capaldi, I like that. Let's do more of the same. Let's break up this whole structure that we're used to.
Good. Anybody other thoughts?
I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Ibit, why don't you take us out with this last one?
Close us out. All right. Four classic DC heroes are coming to Legends of Tomorrow, and one of them is Lunacy. Even with a mere two episodes aired, Legends of Tomorrow hasn't exactly been shy about bringing heroes and villains from the DC universe to TV. And there are many more on the way. We've just learned of four more heroes who are going to make their live action debut on the show, and one of them is completely ridiculous. Four teases were released on DC's Instagram account. They were each seemingly photos of singular items, although if you do a little Photoshop, you can actually see the comic characters hiding in the background. So here are the four. Hourman.
And y'all will have to fill me in a little bit on these.
Yeah, I think someone needs to fill me in. I know he's been around forever, and I can picture his costume, but I don't know what his... I think he's just a master of time kind of thing, right?
A time lord, if you will.
A time lord, sure.
Okay.
I mean, Rip Hunter is already kind of a time lord, but...
Yeah.
Then you've got Sandman. Not the Marvel Sandman, but the...
Neil Gaiman
DC Sandman? Gaiman Sandman either. Completely different Sandman character that's more about sleep than about being made of sand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has a gun that shoots gas that puts people to sleep. It's a comic from the 90s. All right, got you.
Gotcha. Sergeant Rock.
World War II hero.
The Nick Fury of the of the DC Universe. And Ma Hunkle, which is kind of the big Bertha.
Looking at this pot helmet.
Yes, the pot helmet. The Irving Forbish... pot helmet with a couple eye holes cut out.
She was the first Red Tornado in the 30s?
Yep.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I guess they're looking at Legends of Tomorrow as kind of their, let's just say we can do anything we want on this
their
show.
Their pot luck, if you will.
Oh!
Very
you were
good.
Still wrong about Weasley.
Damn it, Chris! I mean, they feel like they've, I think they feel like they've got a lot more freedom than things they can do on Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow, right?
As far as like, I would say that
whatever they want and kind of go as crazy and as ludicrous as they need to. And Ma Hunkle does seem to be the perfect example of that.
Yeah, it says,
this is cool. What I was going to say is Legends of Tomorrow has really picked up steam for me.
Yeah,
I think it's like last week's episode was pretty amazing, like a little bit unexpected and pretty sweet. So I think, yeah, by all means, explore the gritty corners of this universe and have some fun with it.
Sure.
Because it's super fun. You know what I mean?
I've been waiting for either one of them to come to a network with the anthology series. So think Amazing Stories meets Marvel or DC. So you either Marvel Comics Presents or DC Elseworlds, something that gives you those one shots, or just be able to explore those characters that you don't get to, and you make it a 2-hour. You know, if you do it every quarter or whatever, you could devote a series to it. And you know, you're talking like maybe 5 or 10 or 15 minute just one shots. Show us
such a great idea.
You know, on the Marvel side, show us how Howard the Duck got in the collector's case. Just stuff like that.
Yeah, right. And it just is one shot stories. Like, I think that's a brilliant idea. I'd love to see something like that. And anthology is the way to do it. You know, then they're not committed to, all right, we have to come up with 12 episodes or 24 episodes of why this character is doing what he's doing. No, it's just like, tell one great story.
Yeah. And you know, and you wouldn't even ask, your hands wouldn't necessarily be tied by doing live action that way. You could do some animated stuff in there just to throw it in, because it wouldn't be jarring, because you're just like, oh, wow, we're just getting a different story this time.
Brilliant idea. Love it.
So I guess that is it for today.
That's it.
A lot of great stuff. Fun show, guys. It's been really fun.
Fun for some of us.
You know what, Chris? I was about to be the bigger man and admit my defeat, but no. Screw you.
I'm not going to give that to you now.
That's all right. That's way more delicious.
Well, you know, on your way to Hogwarts, just make sure you listen to our podcast and share it with your friends. Subscribe through iTunes. Find us on blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. And, of course, giantsizedteamup.com/breakingthepanel, where we have a bunch of other great shows for you to check out when you get done listening to ours. So check in next week. We're going to bring more news, more fun, and more of somebody on the cast saying, you were right.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizedteamup.com.